This morning, America's First News starts right after this. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to geico.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
North Korea remains defiant. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka on this Tuesday, August 8th. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The foreign minister of North Korea says he will not negotiate on its nuclear and missile program under any circumstances, even in the wake of new UN sanctions.
President Trump may be on vacation, but that doesn't mean he's quiet on Twitter. Hear about his spat with Connecticut Senator Richard Blumenthal.
The man who wrote the rules about the need for capital letters, numbers, and unusual characters in our passwords says he got it all wrong.
And how the state of Maine is trying to bring back former residents who left in pursuit of greener pastures.
The main thing that companies are offering is a job. They want people to know that if they grew up in Maine and they left 20 years ago thinking that there really was an opportunity there for them, maybe there's more than they thought. In today's atmosphere, in a very tight labor market, companies are also certainly willing to do things like pay for relocation costs for really high-value employees.
Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp says if you left, Maine wants you back. He's here later in the hour. New United Nations sanctions have not quieted North Korea's rhetoric. The foreign minister yesterday threatened to use nuclear weapons against the U.S. if militarily provoked, and said it would under no circumstances negotiate on its nuclear and missile weapons programs. North Korean Foreign Minister Ri Yong-ho yesterday delivered the strongly worded statement to reporters at an Asian regional security conference hours after Secretary of State Rex Tillerson promised to implement the stiffest sanctions yet. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley was on Fox News.
It was a strong day for the United States. It was a strong day for the United Nations, and it was a gut punch to North Korea to let them know the international community tired of it, and we're going to start fighting back.
The sanctions adopted unanimously by the U.N. Security Council over the weekend had the crucial support of not only Russia, but also China, North Korea's main economic partner. The sanctions are meant to close loopholes that have allowed the Kim regime to generate revenue to support its nuclear and military programs. Just because he's on vacation doesn't mean he's not tweeting. On the first weekday of his working vacation, President Trump launched social media attacks on a familiar set of targets. In one of his tweets yesterday, Mr. Trump wrote, quote, interesting to watch Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut talking about hoax Russian collusion when he was a phony Vietnam con artist. The president's response was to Mr. Blumenthal, a Democrat, who on CNN said he favored a law protecting the special counsel from being fired by Mr. Trump as he looks into Russian election meddling.
Our national security and the rule of law are at stake, and I am not going to be distracted or bullied by these slurs.
Mr. Trump's Twitter reference was to the 2010 Senate race, where Mr. Blumenthal was criticized for indicating in public appearances that he had served in Vietnam, when actually he was a Marine Corps reservist who actually remained stateside. Well, as members of Congress head home for their August recess, they'll be facing voters who are upset that they failed to pass either tax reform or a bill to repeal and replace Obamacare. Those are two major agenda items they initially promised to complete by the summer break. More from Al Weaver, political reporter at the Washington Examiner. Al, what awaits them as they return to their districts?
Well, they're facing some angry voters right now. I mean, Republicans, they tout a lot of different things, whether it's changes they made on regulatory reform or some other various issues, but they haven't gotten any major piece of legislation through. Obviously, they've had issues getting health care done. Tax reform has taken longer than they expected, and that's maybe going to happen toward the end of the year if it does at all. There's been no infrastructure bill, anything like that. So it's been a tough road for Republicans throughout the first 6 months, first 200 days. And their voters are not exactly happy about that. And right now they're back home facing 4 or 5 weeks of dissatisfied voters at town halls and various other events.
So you referenced healthcare reform and the tax overhaul. Are they going to say that these are works in progress and are not actually dead right now?
Well, yeah. I mean, of course they're going to. They can't go back right now to their voters and sit there and say, okay, well, this is dead. You know, we're not going to, healthcare is not going to happen. I mean, something is going to happen in healthcare one way or another, I believe. I mean, whether it is some sort of repeal of place, which I highly doubt it is at this point, or some sort of smaller fix that forms the 40% of Obamacare that doesn't, you know, go ahead and repeal all the taxes, repeal the individual mandate, that type of stuff. That's going to be tougher for them to get done. What I'm expecting likely to get done, probably if they do it by the end of September, is the timeline that a lot of us are hearing, is, you know, we're going to, you know, we'll get some of this stuff done, maybe repeal some of the taxes, maybe work with some Democrats on shoring up the CSRs. So, you know, it depends who you talk to, but right now it's not a great situation for them.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Al Weaver, political reporter at the Washington Examiner, about his piece entitled Republicans Brace for Dissatisfied Voters This Summer as they head home on their August recess. Do you think that they may come back in September with a commitment to actually work with the other side to get stuff done, because they're going to hear so much about having accomplished nothing?
Well, you know, that's going to be the thing we're going to have to wait and see about. I'm not sure. I mean, I've been one of those people that said, okay, well, they're going to have to get something done. They just can't. And they can't not do it. And then they go ahead and they don't get anything done. So I don't know anymore. You know, we're going to have to see. I mean, September 2017 is a big deadline for them, because they need to have something healthcare-related-wise done by then, because that's when the budget's going to need to get done, and the new fiscal year gets into play, and they won't have reconciliation to do anything. So, but a lot of some senators, obviously McCain is one of them, Lisa Murkowski is another one, is calling for Senate to go through regular order, and they keep talking about Obamacare back in 2009, 2010, and how Democrats, how the bill passed it with Democrat support and no Republican support. They basically said this is a mistake, that was a mistake, and we're making a mistake on making it just a partisan issue when we should all talk about this and all figure things out.
The real deadline, I guess, is next year's midterms, right? They want to be able to have stuff, those who are running for re-election, want to have stuff in their pocket to be able to say, okay, you know, we might have gotten off to a slow start, but here's what we've done since. Is that part of the plan?
A little bit. They need to get some wins on the board. I mean, I've heard multiple members have said, you know, if we can't get tax reform done or any sort of tax thing done by the end of the year, we can kiss the 2018 midterms goodbye. I mean, healthcare is one thing. That was always a tough thing. But if they can't get tax reform done or any sort of tax anything done, because, I mean, one thing Republicans broadly agree on is the lower rate, you know, much more than they do anything on healthcare. And it's something that's easier to understand for their voting base. It's easier for them to get that out there and say, okay, well, we did this. It's easier to explain tax cuts than it is anything healthcare, at least when getting into the nitty-gritty. So, you know, I mean, they need to get some wins on the board, and President Trump needs to get some wins on the board if he wants to get ready for 2020, obviously. And then, obviously, it's only 2017. We probably should be looking at 2020, but here we are. And, they need to get some W's on the board if they want to win 2018 and hold on to the House. That's the big thing.
Thanks, Al. Al Weaver, political reporter at the Washington Examiner. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Police in western Missouri continue looking for a man they say is armed and dangerous after the fatal shooting of a police officer. A first-degree murder charge was filed yesterday against 39-year-old Ian McCarthy from the town of Clinton, about 90 miles north of Springfield. Missouri State Highway Patrol Sergeant Bill Lowe says he's a person of interest after Officer Gary Michael was shot and killed after pulling over a driver in that town Sunday night.
Officer Michael got out of his vehicle to contact the driver. The driver got out of his vehicle immediately and fired a round towards Officer Michael, which struck him.
Officer Michael died at a nearby hospital. The vehicle was found crashed against a tree about two blocks away. Investigators believe Mr. McCarthy may still be on foot after the crash of his vehicle, or he may have found a ride. Online court records indicate Mr. McCarthy had a warrant out for his arrest after being charged in 2015 with unlawful possession of a firearm. Just to clarify, a first-degree murder charge has been filed. They are searching for this 39-year-old Ian McCarthy. It's 20 minutes after the hour. On This Morning, Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, warning that packs of wolves are coming in attack to strangle a nation. North Korea is escalating its criticism of the United States and its neighboring allies. Pyongyang today is warning it will mobilize all its resources to take physical action in retaliation against the latest round of United Nations sanctions. Attorney General Jeff Sessions issued a blistering statement after Chicago filed its lawsuit in federal court that defends cities that limit cooperation with enforcement of U.S. immigration laws. Sessions says the Trump administration, quote, will not simply give away grant dollars to city governments that proudly violate the rule of law and protect criminal aliens at the expense of public safety. Chicago Corporation Counsel Edward Siskel definitely wants the grant money.
We are at a time when every bit counts and every resource matters in this crime fight.
But Siskel says Chicago's position is that being a welcoming city means being a sanctuary city. The parents of an 8-year-old Cincinnati boy who hanged himself blame a treacherous school environment, alleging in a federal lawsuit filed Monday that elementary school officials allowed and covered up bullying. The wrongful death suit filed by the parents of 8-year-old Gabriel Tai names officials at his school and the district as defendants. The nation from the southwest to the middle Atlantic got a soaking yesterday. Floodwaters across the I-15 freeway in Utah left a debris field 8 miles wide. In Salisbury, Maryland, an apparent tornado flipped an SUV in a parking lot, crumbled walls and shredded roofs, all injuries minor. Police Captain Rich Kaiser says the forecast was just for rain.
And it caught us off guard a little bit, but we're certainly prepared, and we got officers out there, and our people in Public Works are making things happen right now.
Firefighters saved drivers trapped in cars after 4 inches of rain fell in 3 hours in the San Antonio, Texas area. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio wants to impose a millionaire's tax to fix the city's crumbling subway system. The tax on the wealthiest New Yorkers would also fund half-price bus and subway rides for some of the city's poorest residents. Officials in Georgia's oldest city say a construction contractor fatally injured a century-old live oak tree. Savannah officials say the crew failed to notify the city it was digging on public property, so they want the contractor to pay a $500 fine plus expenses, which brings the total to $37,000.
More than the cost of the tree?
Really? You know, how much is a new sapling?
Yeah. That's not going to go over well in Savannah.
Not so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Rasa. It's 23 minutes now after the hour. Time now for a finance update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Get away and save up to 30%. At participating Lexington and Red Lion hotels when you book by September 4th. Book your hotel stay and save today. As you start a new job, don't forget about your old 401k. How you choose to juggle accounts from former workplaces could make a big difference in how much you'll ultimately have at retirement. It's a story from Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. Kelly, what do we have?
Well, just know that this is usually not something that you need to do immediately. Often cases, you'll have a little more time to think about what your options are here. But in the big three when you're weighing them are usually that you might be able to leave the money where it is. Number two, you could roll it into your new employer's plan. And number three, you could roll it into an individual retirement account. And the thing you need to think about kind of immediately there is you might not have all of those options available to you. Depending on how much you have in the account, your old employer might be able to basically cut you a check and push you out. That you would have to transfer that money, or your new employer might not accept funds from another 401k. So you need to be thinking about what you can do before you decide what is the best of the remaining options for you.
I didn't know that there were restrictions. So you gave like the $5,000 example. If you have less than that, you might not be able to roll it over or something?
If it's a small 401k, small balance you've got in there, then sometimes they'll let you stay in the plan, but they don't have to. They could actually push you out there. And there's some fine print within, you know, exactly, you know, what they have to notify and you know, how they would go about doing that process. But it's worth knowing if you've got only a little bit of a balance in there that you might want to be taking a really much closer look at what your options are.
Another thing you wrote here, if you're rolling over an account from a job you recently left, make sure that you're not inadvertently leaving money behind, meaning what?
Well, we would all like to think we've taken all of our steps to clear out that account fully, but oftentimes what people forget is if your plan had something like a profit-sharing contribution that you've earned, maybe that hasn't posted to your account yet, or there would be other company contributions, essentially, that should be there but haven't yet gone through. So you'd want to circle back and make sure that you really have cleared out that account and there isn't something else that you were entitled to that's, you know, going to show up a little bit after the fact. That's where we find out a lot of times for people who end up forgetting about accounts that they had. It's oftentimes these small amounts of money that they didn't realize were going to be there and suddenly were left.
If you're let go from a company or you decide to leave on your own and there's a 401k in place, these things are usually spelled out for you, right, in terms of what your options are?
Usually it is, you know, but you've got to realize in some cases there can be some self-interest there. What we hear from benefits administrators is there can be kind of a hard sell for people to roll over their plans. So even if you're entitled to leave your account just where it is, you might get a lot of enticements from people who want you to put that money in an IRA instead. So you really need to weigh your options pretty carefully.
Thanks, Kelly. Kelly Grant, consumer reporter at CNBC.com. She's also a certified financial planner. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.com. .org.
Ransomware is software that can infiltrate your business through email, enabling cyber criminals to hijack sensitive information as ransom for your own data's release. Leveraging Barracuda email security with advanced threat detection can stop a ransomware attack in its tracks. As an added measure, Barracuda Backup allows you to recover your data without having to surrender to extortion. Crime doesn't pay when you protect your business data with Barracuda. Go to barracuda.com/ransomware to learn more.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. It is Tuesday, August 8th. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. North Korea says it won't negotiate on its weapons program. Trump tweaks Senator Blumenthal on Twitter. Google employee who wrote a memo criticizing the company's diversity policy has been fired. Manhunt for a cop killer in Missouri. A third Boy Scout has died after his boat collided with a live power line in East Texas. A second data dump from the purported HBO hackers. And the man who created our password rules admits he got it all wrong. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, employers and recruiters looking to fill positions in Maine are scouring the U.S. for people who once lived in the northern New England state in hopes work will coax them back. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. John, what's going on here?
Employers and recruiters in the state are looking for the people who used to live there and already left it behind in hopes that those people will help solve a rising demographic problem there.
What's happening? Why are people leaving Maine?
One of the challenges in Maine is that, plenty of people grow up there, and it's a fairly small state. It doesn't have a major city, so lots of people leave for college, or they want to go live in New York or Boston or San Francisco. They want to go try out living in a big city. This happens in lots of small states. And what employers and recruiters want to show these people is that maybe there's more job opportunities in Maine than they thought. So if they have an affinity for the state, they ought to give it another look. And they're really trying to deal with a couple of problems there. One is a very low unemployment rate. The unemployment rate in Maine right now is about 3.5%, and it's lower around the largest city in Portland. And then, of course, there's a looming demographic challenge there. Maine has the oldest median age in the nation at 44.6 years. And that means that lots of people are headed for retirement, and there aren't enough new workers replacing them fast enough.
How do these recruiters find the people they're looking for?
a lot of detective work. As recruiters have told me, the old days where you can just post a job and wait for the resumes to roll in, those are over. They really spend a lot more time beating the bushes and scouring things like LinkedIn and Facebook and looking for people who have a connection to Maine. Either they were born there or they went to college there. Because what recruiters have said is that people who don't know Maine, the state can be a little bit of a tough sell on them. It's not that Maine isn't a fine place, but if people are unfamiliar with it, they might think that it's really cold and remote and they just really don't understand the place. But if people are from there, the thought is that they're already charmed by the culinary scene in Portland or the quaint towns along the Rocky coastline and the easy access to mountains and wilderness and things like that.
Does that mean that employers with an opening, for example, might have a little something else to sweeten the deal or not necessarily?
The main thing that companies are offering is a job. They want people to know that if they grew up in Maine and they left 20 years ago thinking that there really was an opportunity there for them, maybe there's more than they thought. In today's atmosphere, in a very tight labor market, companies are also certainly willing to do things like pay for relocation costs for really high-value employees.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. His piece is called, If You Left, Maine Wants You Back. What types of jobs typically are you going to find there?
Well, there's all sorts. The jobs where the market for employees are the tightest are in fields like IT and healthcare. And you really hear that all over the U.S. People with skills and experience in those fields, there are people looking for them. But that means that, you know, Maine is competing against, you know, big cities and much bigger labor markets and has to really try and convince people to uproot and live in a state that doesn't have a major city and doesn't have a deep pool of major companies. So that remains a challenge.
Have you talked to anybody who decided, you know what, it's time, we're going to Maine?
Yes, I certainly did. One example is a guy named Jay Dearborn, and he grew up in Maine, and like so many other people, he left for college. In this case, he went to Pennsylvania for college about 20 years ago, and, you know, certainly at the time didn't think he'd be coming back to Maine to live and work anytime soon. But 20 years later, he had a lunch with the CEO of a payment processing firm there called WEX Inc., and she ended up helping recruit him to return home. And he is now loving it. He really thinks that it's been a great move for him and for his family. And so that's what many companies and recruiters are hoping to replicate.
I don't know, there's some sort of group that's spending big money to do this, or is this kind of recruiters just on their own?
Well, the state has pumped in a little bit of money into an organization that one recruiter started up that has a website where companies can list jobs and where, you know, it has a jobs board to try and match up candidates and companies. So that's one part of it. And the state is, the governor in Maine is also pushing for a bond program that would essentially help students repay their loans as long as they stay at a company in Maine for a number of years.
Thanks, John. It's Wall Street Journal reporter John Camp. It is 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like some cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter @GordonDeal. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, we've heard about mayors and governors betting each other over the outcome of a World Series or a Super Bowl, but rarely do elected officials challenge each other so directly as two New England governors have. Governor Chris Sununu of New Hampshire and Governor Phil Scott of Vermont appear to be headed for a showdown on the racetrack. Sununu tweeted the challenge to Scott on Monday after Scott was involved in a drag racing mini school buses over the weekend, and Scott accepted. This is quite the bold move for Sununu because Governor Scott is an accomplished stock car racer with 30 career wins at Thunder Road in Vermont, his most recent victory coming just a month ago. Before taking up stock car racing, Scott also raced motorcycles and snowmobiles. There's no word on when the governors might race or what they might race in, though Scott told Sununu he can pick the vehicle.
What is Sununu thinking?
I don't know. I don't know why he thought this would be a good idea. I mean, you know, half of Governor Scott's Wikipedia page is just about his racing exploits.
Oh, my.
I mean, this is what he did. This is his thing, and he's apparently really good at it.
Wow.
He's not just a weekend hobbyist.
Yeah, when you say you're willing to accept a race challenge,
yeah,
and you offer the opponent any type of vehicle he wants to race in,
yes,
I'm pretty sure You're confident about your abilities.
He is super confident, and I'd say not a great look necessarily to sort of put yourself out there and then get beaten down. But I guess but in some ways also I guess a no win situation for Governor Scott, who I mean people would expect him to win.
True,
right? So if he does win, well, we expected you to win, and if you lose, well, now you're in trouble.
I just wouldn't mess with a guy at all who races mini school buses.
Yeah. I mean.
Because what's the propensity of those things to roll over?
Yeah,
right.
You gotta
slight turn; those things are flipping.
You gotta have some skills for sure.
If I were Governor Scott, maybe opt for like a big wheel or a tricycle.
There you go.
Just really relying on pedal power, and not so much skill of driving one of these.
Now that would be lots of fun. That's a race I might even pay to watch.
Yeah, raise money for children's charity or something like that.
Yes.
Then if you get embarrassed, you can at least say, "Well, we did a good deed."
Let's hope that's what comes out of this. And watching a total eclipse of the sun, as we've heard a lot about lately, is a once-in-a-lifetime experience for most people. So is seeing Sasquatch. If you're looking to cross both items off your bucket list at once, there's a new map that shows the locations of Bigfoot sightings inside the Path of Totality, giving you a better-than-normal chance to see the eclipse with a hairy new friend. The Huffington Post says the map's creator isn't a Bigfoot believer himself, but he had seen so many increasingly specific eclipse-related maps that he took it as a challenge to create a new one. He says he was surprised how widely his map, which he calls Sunsquatch, was shared, and has since received tweets featuring maps of UFO sightings, breweries, and places named Eclipse within the Path of Totality, just to name a few. So I was looking at, I don't know much about this eclipse thing, I know everyone's been talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So here in the Northeast, is the situation is we're actually not going to see much of it.
No.
It's not going to look so good for us. There's sort of a bar, I guess, that goes across the middle of the country.
Yes.
Goes from, it looks like, northern Oregon down sort of across the country, down through South Carolina.
Yes.
To sort of this narrow bar. And those people are going to see a great eclipse, and we're not going to see a whole lot of anything.
Correct.
Oh, that's great.
And what's going to happen is that the people who watch this intensely across that bar, you mentioned, are going to get what is a common condition known as sunquatch. And that what happens is that when you stare too long at a solar eclipse, hair pockets break out all over your body.
Nice.
In a condition known as sunquatch.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's mark it on our calendars. Yeah, August 21st.
You ever hear about poor old Dave? Yeah, he came down with that sunquatch. Watched that eclipse back in 1919. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Rasa K is back with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, North Korea today is warning it will mobilize all its resources to take physical action in retaliation against the latest round of United Nations sanctions. The statement carried by the North state-run news agency was the strongest indication yet the country could conduct another nuclear or missile test, as it had done in response to past United Nations sanctions. 37-year-old Clinton, Missouri police officer Gary Michael, on the job for only about a year, was shot and killed while approaching a traffic stop Sunday night. Sergeant Bill Lowe with the Missouri State Highway Patrol says Michael never had a chance in the confrontation.
Officer Michael got out of his vehicle to contact the driver. The driver got out of his vehicle immediately and fired a round towards Officer Michael, which struck him.
The manhunt is underway for the suspected trigger man, identified as Ian McCarthy. Camden, New Jersey police are looking for the ATV rider they say intentionally struck two officers, leaving one with a severe concussion and broken ribs. Surveillance video captured the scene when cops pulled up to investigate the suspect tampering with equipment at a gas station. He then jumped onto his ATV and rammed the police vehicle. Monday marked the 35th time the Dow Jones Industrial Averages ended at a record so far this year, a streak not seen since the 38 record closes in 2014. Doug Roberts with Channel Capital Research.
At this point, the trend is more of a drift upwards, a slow back and forth kind of drip, as opposed to a raging bull. There still is always the possibility that you could have an outside event which forms a sharp correction, but thus far we're not seeing anything along those lines.
If it stays on the upside, August will be the Dow's fifth monthly gain in a row and its ninth in the past 12 months. The Pentagon's considering a plan that allows the U.S. military to conduct airstrikes on ISIS in the Philippines. The strikes would likely be conducted by armed drones. Sources also say the U.S. will send additional Marines to Afghanistan to aid with internal force protection. Can you see Cate Blanchett as Lucille Ball? Amazon Studios is making a movie called Lucy and Desi, with the Oscar winner set to star as the comedy legend. Aaron Sorkin's written the script. They're still looking for an actor to play Desi Arnaz.
She'd have to lose the Australian accent if she were to do that, I guess.
Ah, she can do that.
Of course she can. She can do whatever she wants. And I'll watch. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. Thanks for being with us. The man who wrote the book on password management has a confession. He blew it. The Wall Street Journal says back in 2003, Bill Burr was author of an 8-page primer that advised people to protect their accounts by inventing awkward new words with obscure characters, capital letters, numbers, right? And to change them regularly. Problem is, the advice ended up largely incorrect, he says. Change your password every 90 days, as most people make minor changes that are just too easy to guess. Also off the mark, demanding a letter, number, uppercase letter, and special character, such as an exclamation point or question mark. Academics who've studied passwords say using a series of 4 words can be harder for hackers to crack than a short string of strange characters. In fact, experts agree with one man's calculation that it would take 550 years to crack the password correct horse battery staple, all written as one word. A typical example of a password using Mr. Burr's old rules could be cracked in as little as 3 days. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.